What's up, everyone? Welcome back in episode 59, Between the Tackles podcast. You know my voice. You may not like hearing it. You're going to hear a lot of it today because I got a lot of gloating to do today. But I'm Burge. I'm your host here. Hogan is finally back in the saddle. Missed last week. We missed you. Missed the crap talking, but I'm happy to have you back. How you doing, buddy?
I'm great. I'd be better off if you'd shut up. But other than that, I'm great. No, I'm kidding. It's good to be back. I'm glad you're happy-go-lucky because you won and all that crap. But let's go talk to the other guy that we both love down there. That's Manish Mehta. How's Manish doing? That's what I want to know.
I'm doing great. I'm getting ready for the playoffs. You know, the team I root for plays Sunday at 4:30. The team that you guys root for, what were they on the schedule for the playoffs?
Oh wow! Yeah, we talking about smock, talking smack.
Starting off
here.
On
listen
a good
to this
note.
Guy. Yeah, listen to this.
Well, I see Patriot Pat in the backdrop there, Hogan. So yeah, I had to make a comment about that.
Yeah, well, it's the old style, right? That's we're in the olden days now, where we reminisce about championships. We're crappy now, so that's how it works. We're like 99% of the rest of the fans in the NFL. Whoa, snap! I went there.
Yeah, well, we are, and we're going to talk a lot about that in this episode here. As Manish just alluded to, the 2024 regular season is in the books. It flew by. For me, it absolutely flew by. I can't believe 18 weeks of football went by, and now we're at the playoffs, and now we're hopefully going to see some good football. Unlike last week, Manish, we talked about that last week, the amount of garbage football games that were on outside of, I think there was five matchups that had any kind of implication or real implication outside of maybe some jostling of some seating, but there was a lot of bad teams playing last week. And I'm just going to go right into it. The worst of the worst, the Patriots played my hated team, the Buffalo Bills. Okay. Manish, I was on record on the episode last week. Who was I rooting for? Who was my pick?
I you were was not rooting for the Patriots. That's for sure.
I was circling the wagons. And that did not happen. The Patriots end up losing this game. They end up losing. They lose the number one overall pick. They move down to pick four because they decided to win a meaningless game. I was sitting there like watching this game, and I'm just like angry. I'm like, I had a lot of willpower not to drop any cuss words in front of my children watching this game, watching Joe Milton, the guy I wanted to play. I was all about play him so they'll lose. Dude was out there slinging it. He was absolutely slinging it out there for the Patriots. Like, where was this? Where did this come from? Do we really have two quarterbacks? Now you get that whole discussion that's going to perpetuate through the offseason, even though we all know here who watch football, no football, that Drake May is the quarterback and there's no controversy, but you're going to hear about it on the talk radio waves if you take that in. But this game just really grinded my gears. And I'm going to go to the fellow Patriot fan on this podcast, Hogan. Was this just a giant final kick in the nuts from the 2024 Patriots and Gerard Mayo?
Of course it was. And I called it as soon as the Giants won that game against the Colts the weekend prior, where I sat there and everybody's like, oh, let's go. Patriots got the number one pick. And I'm sitting there going, they're going to fuck it up. They're going to win. They're going to beat Buffalo in the final week of the season. It's going to happen. Like, I knew in my heart of hearts that even if Mayo didn't get fired, the whole mantra, oh, we're going out there to win games, and that the detriment. I mean, we had this conversation last year where, remember, Manish, remind me, wasn't there somebody on this podcast that was all butthurt because the Patriots lost to the Jets in week 18 last year? Do you remember that?
Yeah, it wasn't. I don't think it was either one of us.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and what did that do? Oh, it gave the Patriots the third overall pick when they could have the second overall pick, and now we're in the fourth overall. But anyway, I digress. No, honestly, the game was just crap in terms of what it cost the franchise for the future picks that they possibly could have gotten, because I think everybody on the planet knows the value of a top five pick, but also knows the value between a fourth overall pick and the number one overall pick, obviously based off of what the Chicago Bears have been able to do, what other different teams have been able to do in the past based off of trades and whatnot. But I will go on record as saying that after the game ended and I took a step back and I watched some of the stuff that happened after the game in terms of the press conferences afterwards, they spoke to Joe Milton. And I got to say that I had to reflect as a former player, a former coach, the kid balled out and was on cloud nine with what he was feeling, 100%. The euphoria of playing in the game. And the fact that his first game in the NFL and experiencing those things, he got showered with booze because they scored points, left a really sour taste in my mouth. Granted, I will be the first to admit, I was one of the ones booing at home because I was like, we cannot win this game. I don't want to see us win this game. It was the worst win in franchise history, as far as I'm concerned. But I also have to reflect and sit there and go, you know what? This kid is living his dream, and this is how a reflection of how he's going to remember this part. I hope he gets another chance, whether it's with the Patriots or somewhere else, but I hope he is able to bounce back from that type of game and obviously experience the highs of the NFL on a different level than he did on that game.
You know, you say that, and it's like the Patriots did try to lose. They played the backups. Drake May played a series. It's not like they were really truly doing, you know, the tank job. And you're not going to ask a backup on the team to go out there and quote unquote throw the game when the first overall pick or whatever pick it is could be drafted to replace that player. So those guys that were playing in this game were playing for their NFL lives. I respect that side of it. I was getting really, really agitated when they were out there celebrating after plays, just from the fan perspective, where I'm just like, dude, I don't care that you just broke up this pass. Nobody in that stadium cares that you broke up that pass. But at the same time, based, you know, going off what you said, like, you understand it at the end of the day when you take a step back and look at it. Manish, Patriots obviously, we know, fired Jerod Mayo after this game. We talked last week. We were on the fence about whether he was going to stay or go. The hammer came down pretty quick. I think it was like an hour after the game that Schefter tweeted out Jerod Mayo was fired. Now,
4 hours too late.
If you're Robert Kraft, right? If you're Robert Kraft and you know you're going to make that decision, why wait? Why give Mayo another chance? When you could honestly just make a special teams coach the interim head coach, who probably going to lose the game at that point. You just give the instructions, hey, this is what we're going to do, and follow it. Is there a second guess there?
If I were the Crafts, I would definitely have a second guessing moment there, because, as you said, you know, Jerod Mayo at that point probably knew that he wasn't coming back, even if it wasn't explicitly expressed to him. You can kind of read the tea leaves in the building if you're in his position. And look, Robert Kraft had a pretty lengthy statement that he released a few hours after the game. He didn't just put that together after the final whistle blew. He knew before the game. He likely knew a couple weeks before. Certainly he knew after the Week 17 game. So I'm with you. I don't think, you know, you're being any less respectful, if that's what you're concerned about, to Jerod Mayo by firing him with one game left. What's the difference between firing him after Week 17 or Week 18? But at least if you fire him, as you said, after Week 17, before the season finale, you know, like you said, you put the defense coordinator in, special teams coach as the interim. You make it clear, yeah, you know, we're going to play conservatively here. We know what the bigger picture is. And, you know, the guys on the field, whether it's Joe Milton or Booty, whoever's out there, they're obviously going to play hard. They are not going to go half speed. But you make it clear, at least to the interim head coach, look, this is what we'd like to see. You know, a couple years ago, we kind of saw something similar when the Eagles were playing the Saints in the season finale. And by losing and pulling their starter, Jalen Hurts, in the second half when they were leading, they, in effect, screwed the New York Giants, who didn't make the playoffs that season, and also helped, you know, their own draft position. The Eagles did that. So it's not like this hasn't happened before. I just think it was a critical mistake. Hogan, you touched on this a moment ago. You know, what could have been? It's great for Joe Milton's personal story. I thought he had a good response recently. I think a fan maybe asked him on Instagram or some social media platform, and his response was, look, this is, you know, something I've been waiting for all preseason. I'm going to give everything I got and show everybody what I have. I totally understand and respect his perspective. But if you're a fan of the team, while that's a feel-good story, the bigger picture is that you want your team, your franchise, to be in the best position possible when the season ends. And that was to lose the game for so many reasons. Burge, I think maybe you and I had texted earlier in the week, just so much was lost by them winning this game. The difference between having the fourth pick or the third pick, whatever they have, and the first pick is gargantuan in terms of draft capital. You would have had an extra first-round pick in 2026. You would have had several extra premium picks, second- and third-round picks in 2025 and 2026. It just would have stockpiled your reservoir so much where you probably would have gotten the same player you were going to get in the current situation plus all those additional picks. All you had to do was to lose, and it didn't happen. Again, you can't force the players on the field to, you know, to bag it, but you can set yourself up in a position where you're at a stark disadvantage. And I think one of the things that the Crafts really made a mistake on was waiting until the final game to fire Mayo when they clearly knew they were going to fire Mayo. Should have been done before the season was over. And right now we'd be having a very different conversation about the offseason outlook for this franchise as they position themselves to rebuild and rebuild quickly.
And you know, the next day, Robert Kraft came out with a press conference. He had the press come down to Gillette and they did a whole big thing. And he gave his statement saying about, you know, I was actually surprised by the fact that he took accountability for what happened. Jerod Mayo was his handpicked guy years ago. That's on record with him saying that. And, you know, he owned that he made a mistake and that he put Jerod Mayo in a very bad spot. And he went as far to say that he felt terrible for Jerod Mayo. Now, in such a cutthroat business, right, the NFL is a cutthroat league. Like, if you fall behind, like, everybody moves on without you. It almost seems like he put his personal sentiment ahead of the betterment of the team and the franchise by letting Mayo coach that last game, not giving any kind of instruction as to how to handle that game. Now, that's a little bit of a gray area. I wouldn't want my owner meddling with my head coach like that in any situation, because I think that's just bad organizational culture at the end of the day. But the sentiment from his press conference was that he felt terrible for Jerod Mayo. And, you know, I don't think he did him any more, gave him any more respect by firing him an hour after the game. Like, if he wanted to give him the respect, fire him on Monday. Like, give him the rest of the day to enjoy his last win as a head coach and, you know, move on. Like, he's up there at the podium answering questions about meeting with Robert next week or tomorrow, like we always do. And 30 minutes later, he left the podium and he was fired. Like, to me, that's just as disrespectful as firing him a week early. And, you know, that's leaving out the whole impact to the franchise. And that for me, I'm on record on this podcast saying I will never root for my team to lose. This was the first time that I actually crossed that line and said, lose this game. I don't care if it's Buffalo. Buffalo's playing their backups. Don't even get me started on the whole Josh Allen streak where he comes out, he plays one play, hands the ball off, and gets off the field. Like, that's just a joke, if you ask me. But in this game, Sean McDermott pants the Patriots in tanking. Like, they clearly did not want to win that game the way they played. Mike White came into the game in what, the late third quarter? Their third string quarterback. They were clearly preventing the Patriots from losing this game. And obviously, like, the whole Joe Milton story, I think that is probably one of the better stories of the year if you're talking from a player's perspective for the Patriots. A guy who sat on the bench, was hardly ever active. He might have been active for one game before this, if that. Seeing him go out there and actually look like a finished product of an NFL quarterback. Granted, he's playing against backups, but like, he's got a freaking arm on him. Some of those throws were cannons. And like, hey, maybe the Patriots got themselves a draft asset there when somebody comes calling, hey, we'll take Milton. You give up a mid-round pick for Joe Milton and turn that asset into something. Maybe that's a consolation that comes out of this. Who knows? But at the end of the day, Patriots moved on. They lose. They got the fourth overall pick. I said last week, they end up with the first overall pick. All Patriots fans are going to be united as to what they want to do with that draft pick. Now that they're picking fourth, just reading along the, you know, the articles from the beat reporters, you have the people going around on Twitter or X. Everybody's kind of split on what they want them to do again. And it's going to make for some debate amongst the fans. Hogan, where do you want to see the Patriots go at number four? Real early here. Where do you want them to go here? I know where I want them to go.
You know what I'm going to say. Draft them a fatty. Get a fat man. secure the line. We're already sitting here talking about, oh, Joe Milton's trade capital. We could potentially trade him for something. No, absolutely not. Do not trade Joe Milton because Drake May got hurt twice this year. Mm-hmm. Because you don't have an offensive line. I think the only offensive line that could be considered worse in the league at this point was what? Either it was Cleveland or Chicago that used 27 different starting combinations at one point. It was like something crazy where I don't think I've ever seen an offensive line in shambles that bad. So for all these clowns sitting there going, oh, Travis Hunter this, and oh, the playmaker this, like the Patriots cannot draft the skill position. I've had this debate with so many people where, do you know the last receiver that the Patriots have drafted that cracked 1,000 yards that was naturally drafted at the receiver position? That was Deion Branch. And how long ago was that?
I was going to go further back, to be honest with you.
I forgot about Deion. It was Deion freaking Branch because Edelman was drafted. He was a quarterback. Every skill player they have whiffed on in 20-plus years. So what do you not whiff on? What do you build a team with? The trenches, the fatties. Protect Drake May, get a run game established, get this team back to where it needs to be. At this point, everybody's already saying Vrabel's the new head coach, and guess what he loves to do? He loves to pound the rock. He's a Derrick Henry fan. He wants to run the ball. Ramondre Stevenson, stop fumbling the goddamn ball and get behind some fatties and run, and Drake May stay upright. That's where we're at this point. And if they do anything different, well, get ready for another 3 or 4 win season next year.
I am 100% with you there. Draft the offensive line, sign a receiver, draft a receiver later. Who knows? Like, because honestly, I forgot about Deion Branch. I was going to go far back and say Terry Glenn. Like, that's as far back as I was going to go. Like, we're talking 90s now.
Right.
But yeah, I totally agree with you. But, you know, like you said, you touched on it there for a minute. Patriots are in the hunt for head coach. Mike Vrabel's a hot commodity name that's going around. He interviewed with the Patriots today. You know, it was interesting. Mike Vrabel's interview took place not at Gillette, but it was in Boston. According to the Patriots' Twitter, it was somewhere in Boston. Now, speculation is that he was at Robert Kraft's house, which is in Brookline, Chestnut Hill area of Boston. So maybe a little bit more personal touch there for Mike Vrabel. Couple other guys in the Patriots coaching search right now, they interviewed Byron Leftwich, Pep Hamilton, and have a Zoom interview with Ben Johnson Friday the 10th, so tomorrow when we're recording here. They were turned down by Aaron Glenn for a request to interview him, the defensive coordinator from Detroit. Manish, I want to get your take on how the Patriots are running this coaching search, because to me, you know, you have guys like come out of nowhere, like Byron Leftwich and Pep Hamilton, who weren't even coaches this past season, which is why they probably interviewed them early. And the only notable names that you got are the two top candidates, arguably, on the market this cycle. Where do you see the Patriots going with their coaching decision here? It's a big one.
I mean, they're going to offer the job. They're Vrabel. So I think that's the worst kept secret in NFL circles. I'm assuming he's going to take the job. You know, he will have other options, whether it's Vegas or perhaps Chicago. I just think it's too good of a fit. I think it makes a lot of sense on both sides. And that's because of one person, and that's Drake May. If Drake May didn't exist and they didn't have a quarterback, then I think as much as Mike Vrabel likes coming back to the Patriots, as much as Robert Kraft would want him to be the new Patriots coach, I think things would be a lot different for Mike Vrabel. But because Drake May does exist, I think it would be the number one destination if you're Vrabel. If you're interested in going to the Raiders, who just fired their general manager a couple days after firing Antonio Pierce, the upside is that you'll have a lot of control. The upside for Vrabel, obviously, is his close relationship with Tom Brady, who's going to be intimately involved in that search. The Bears' job, the appeal is pretty obvious. Caleb Williams, young, potentially future star quarterback, just like the Patriots have in Drake May. You also have Roma Dunze, DJ Moore, so you have some good skill position players there. I would say that the dynamics in the front office in Chicago are much different than the other possible options for Vrabel. Vegas, essentially, where he would run the show, and New England, where he's got close ties with the owner. So in that respect, I would think that Chicago would be his third choice. I think that the Raiders would be appealing because of the control, but you don't have a quarterback there. So, you know, what are you really going to have in probably the toughest division in football with three, certainly two future Hall of Fame coaches in Sean Payton and Andy Reid, and perhaps Jim Harbaugh makes the Hall of Fame, who knows, at some point down the road, but clearly a very difficult division, whereas the AFC East, maybe not so difficult, definitely not so difficult. So I think Robert Kraft's going to offer him the job if he already hasn't offered him the job. The fact that this interview was in Boston, let's be honest, it probably was at Robert Kraft's home. Those are all signs to me, which mean that the next head coach for the New England Patriots will be Mike Vrabel. Nobody has said that definitively yet, but I just think it makes way too much sense to not happen. And honestly, I think it's the best choice for the Patriots, regardless of Ben Johnson's availability. I know you guys, I think, Burge, you're especially high on Ben Johnson. I'm not as high on Ben Johnson. I'm not saying he's not going to be a good head coach, but I just think that his stock has risen so much over the last year and a half. And I know the Lions have been great. But the Lions have great personnel. So I'm not saying Ben Johnson would be a flop as a head coach. I just think he's maybe a little bit overvalued in some respects.
Hogan, where do you want to see them go?
I mean, honestly, at this point, I know everybody's gung-ho and head over heels about Vrabel. I just think that the fan base and both Robert Kraft, well, I should say the Krafts, need to take a step back and realize the situation that they're going to put themselves in if they go ahead and just de facto make Vrabel the guy. We just left a former Patriot player that was beloved by the organization, beloved by the fans as a player, former, you know, rookie of the year on the defensive side of the ball, won a Super Bowl with the team in his tenure here, and was given the job and failed epically. Now, in no way, shape, or form am I saying that Mike Vrabel is going to get the job and fail epically. But again, Mike Vrabel is, I would say, on another tier compared to what Gerard Mayo was. He was put in the Patriots Hall of Fame while he was still coaching a different NFL team. I think we all remember that from a couple seasons ago, right? And he was sitting in the box with Kraft while he was the current Tennessee coach. So if this doesn't end well, it's not going to be a good look again for the Krafts. It's not, it's going to be another stain on that legacy of where you hit a home run, or I should say the grandest of slams, with both Brady and Belichick at the same time. And if you go before Belichick, you know, you had success with Bill Parcells in the mid 90s, got to a Super Bowl, lost, unfortunately, but still had success. Went to Pete Carroll before, you know, Pete Carroll was really who he was with Seattle, fell apart there, and then Belichick brought you where you were. So everybody wants to sit there and remember the old debate was, oh, Belichick's nothing without Brady. Well, if you want to sit there, Robert Kraft is nothing without Brady and Belichick, really, if you think about it. So like you said, this decision is paramount, where they can't just anoint the guy because the fans are begging for it or because Vrabel and Kraft are buddies. Kraft and Gerard Mayo were buddies. How did that turn out? So again, I'm not saying it's the same situation. It's a stark parallel that fans, I think real fans need to sit there and go, okay, are they doing their due diligence? Are they looking at every venue here? And again, do we want, are the Krafts trying to get away from the Belichick way? Because they obviously didn't do that where Gerard Mayo was a former player of Belichick. He had guys in-house that still have ties to Belichick. Vrabel is that same type of guy. I'm not saying he's a Belichick clone or anything like that. But again, do you want to start fresh and have the organization built from the bottom up? Or do you want to kind of go back to what you've been doing? So again, will I be upset with Vrabel? No, because he has experience. And I think he's very, contrastually different from what Gerard Mayo brought to the table. But I just think Patriot fans, especially the boneheaded ones, need to take a step back and realize you can't be demanding to fire Vrabel if this team only wins 6 or 7 games next year, which is a very high likelihood based off of their talent.
I think there's one significant difference there, Hogan. I understand the high Q rating factor for Vrabel and Mayo. But I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you guys are Patriots fans, but my sentiment and my thinking is that part of the lore of Vrabel is not that he just was a player who won Super Bowl rings. It's that he actually has had success as a head coach. He's not a first-time head coach like Mayo. You know, he was a number one seed with Tennessee. He had success in the postseason. So it's the combination of, yeah, he's a Patriot for life, but we have recent evidence of him being a good head coach, whereas Mayo was an unknown from the coaching standpoint. From a popularity standpoint, as a former player, I totally see the parallels, but I do think that Patriot fans are like, let's bring this guy in, not only because he's a former Patriot, but he had success as a head coach, and we don't want to go the first-time head coach route because it didn't work. Belichick, second time around, I'm not saying Vrabel's Belichick, but second, third time around certainly helps. You mentioned Parcells. That wasn't his first rodeo in New England. He had success elsewhere. So I think Vrabel's prior success as a head coach plays into it as much as the fact that he was beloved as a player from a Patriots fan perspective. I mean, that's at least kind of the vibe that I get.
Go ahead, Burge.
I was just going to say, the last thought that I have on it is that, you know, Manish, you kind of hit the nail on the head. I don't want to go down a rookie head coach route again. I think that Mike Vrabel will come in here and establish a culture, the culture, the foundation that you need to start building something. And you touched on his experience. He's coached at the college level. He's been a defensive coordinator and a play caller. And he's been a head coach in this league. And like you said, the guy ended the freaking Patriots dynasty, ended Tom Brady's career in New England. Like, you know, he's got pedigree. And, you know, I've gone back and forth on this about wanting the shiny new toy, the modernized offense and everything like that. I think from the head coach perspective, I don't want an offensive play caller as my head coach. I know that's the way the league has gone. And maybe it's just because I'm so used to what Bill Belichick did here. I want that CEO head coach. And I want somebody who's good at it. I don't want somebody who is inept like Gerard Mayo was, clearly inexperienced for the role at this point. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes. Hogan, you got the final thought?
Yeah. Again, I don't disagree with either of you. And again, like I said, in no way would I be upset or disappointed if Vrabel got the job. Again, my point to everything that I regurgitated out there was that I think Patriot fans are looking at Mike Vrabel as the Messiah coming down from the heavens to fix this franchise and make them. I mean, let's be honest. Robert Kraft, in his press conference the day after Gerard Mayo got fired, sat there and told reporters without BSing them that he wants this team to get back to a playoff and or championship level. Robert Kraft, do you see the roster you currently have with this team? You should be talking about getting to a 500 record or better. Don't be talking playoffs. Don't be talking championships. Make a competent team at this point. And that's my point with the whole coaching decision here is if you bring in a guy like Vrabel, like you both said, has pedigree, has past success, don't sit there and expect, okay, 10 wins, we're going to the playoffs, we're winning the division, we're knocking off Buffalo, we're doing all these things. No, and I'm not saying we're not doing that, but Patriot fans who are not the most intelligent sometimes. Yeah, I'll throw that out
Patriots
there.
Patriots fans are spoiled and dumb.
I'm just saying. I mean, I've been called a spoiled Patriot fan a bazillion times, and I like to think of myself as one of the most down-to-earth ones because I look at everything as realistically as I can. Vrabel will not have this team undefeated or in the Super Bowl next year. I will bet my house on it, okay? This roster is not built to do that. That's all I'm trying to say, and I think fans need to realize that it's very few and far between that you see a team circa the Houston Texans a couple of years ago that drafted the second and third overall picks with D'Amico Ryans coming in there and then turned them into division champions, right? Like, how often does that realistically happen in the NFL? And that's what I want to leave that at.
You know, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. I like to think that Vrabel can get them to at least knocking at the door if they fix the roster this offseason with the amount of money and the draft capital they
just
have.
Give them a couple of years. Give them a couple of years.
I'm not going to be sitting there fire Vrabel after year one.
Right.
Like, the guy has experience. He's proven. Gerard Mayo, up until what? 4 weeks ago, I was like, give him another year. We all were on that train. We're like, don't fire him after 1 year.
It was after the bye week that I think everybody finally realized that the ineptitude, because the fact that they got blown out the way that they did against mm-hmm. the Arizona Cardinals after having a week off is just, and then the report, you know, I'm not going to get into it. We're not going to talk about it because I'm going to get
cards on the plane, playing cards on the plane.
That, watching right. film. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's enough Patriots talk before you and I end up blowing gaskets and having steam coming out of our ears. And Manish is sitting down there laughing at us while we're our misery after our 20 plus years of success.
Right.
Let's move on to the rest of the league. There's been obviously coaching movement. Black Monday came and went. Coaches were fired. Some coaches are staying. I just want to touch on a couple of the notable ones. There's a lot we could spend an hour talking about just the coaching situations around the league, but One that really hurt me, and I sent it in the group chat, that my dream staff was crushed, and that is Brian Daboll staying in New York. You know, as much as it hurts me in my dream is crushed for Daboll to be the offensive coordinator of the Patriots. I think it's the right decision for the New York Giants. I think that Brian Daboll is a really good coach, and I think, honestly, the GM should have been canned ahead of time because of the decision to let Saquon walk to the Philadelphia Eagles and giving Daniel Jones that money and then moving on from him in the season. That was the decision that kind of really screwed them over, you know, for this year. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out with the Giants. Obviously going to be looking for a quarterback in the draft this year. Dallas is an interesting one, and this is one I want to get your take on here, Manish. Mike McCarthy, I think he's either under contract or out, or his contract is expiring shortly. Yeah. And I believe it was the Chicago Bears reached out to the Dallas Cowboys, put in a request to interview Mike McCarthy for their head coaching position, and were denied that opportunity to interview McCarthy. Is Mike McCarthy returning to Dallas? I think it colossally will be a very bad decision for Jerry Jones and the Cowboys. I'm here for the theater of it, but want to get your take on it.
Yeah, I'm going to assume that he's coming back. Otherwise, why would the Cowboys deny him the ability to interview for the Bears job? McCarthy's contract expires on January 14th, roughly, you know, a week from now, less than a week from now. So if you aren't going to bring him back, why would you prevent him from interviewing for another job? So to me, this seems like Jerry Jones has decided that McCarthy will come back. It would really be a lowbrow move. I mean, I don't even think Jerry Jones, I don't think anybody would do this. Any owner would do this. It'd be really strange for them not to give Mike McCarthy a contract after denying him the opportunity to interview for another job simply because he had a week left on his existing contract. You know, teams don't do business like that. That's really dirty, and I would anticipate the Cowboys are not doing that as well. So Mike McCarthy's going to be back, whether it's a one-year deal or a two-year deal, who knows? But, you know, the indication that he was denied the ability to interview, to me, signals clearly that the Cowboys have decided to retain him. Now, why they haven't given him an extension or why they haven't given him any kind of public vote of confidence, because Jerry Jones is the most visible owner out there, why that hasn't happened to this point is head scratching to me. But the simple act of not allowing him to interview with a week left on his current contract means that they're retaining him. It can't mean anything else. And if it does mean something else, that's really unfortunate for McCarthy and says a lot about the Cowboys organization. But again, I don't think that's happening.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, I was on record after last season saying that Bill Belichick was going to be the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys at some point, and I couldn't have been more wrong. So I'll take my L on that one, eat my crow there. Quickly, I want to touch on the Jacksonville Jaguars. Not exactly an enticing market or an enticing position for a lot of people, even though they do have Trevor Lawrence there. He's been getting hurt a lot. There's a little bit of concern there. Doug Peterson was fired by Shad Khan down there in Jacksonville. We talked about this a little bit before we came on the recording, and, you know, Shad Khan and the GM, who is retained, not fired by Shad this time as of yet. But there was an interview where they're both on Zoom, I think, or was it some sort of virtual press conference that they did. And a reporter asked Shad straight up, like, if a coach comes in here, like, what are we going to do about the GM position or something like that? I don't know the exact wording of it, but paraphrasing Shad Khan, basically said, if a coach comes in here and it doesn't work with the GM, I'll get rid of the GM and we'll replace him. And Trent Baalke is literally on the call right next to him. Like, if you're Trent Baalke, you can't be happy about that, right?
I think it's really odd, really peculiar for the owner to say, yeah, if the head coach has an idea about upgrading a GM, I'm all ears, while the GM's on the call. I've never heard of that before. Honestly, I think the smarter move would have been to cut ties with both Doug Peterson and Trent Baalke. That way you get a GM and a head coach in here who are aligned, as opposed to a head coach who's got to work with Baalke, because let's be honest, Balky's not going to make the hire. Shad Khan's going to make the hire. We'll get some input from Baalke, but it's going to be a Shad Khan hire. So I don't quite understand the dynamics in that respect. What I will say is there have been instances in the past where the owner is kind of unfamiliar how to navigate the coaching terrain and the hiring cycle, especially if they're hiring a GM and a head coach. Hiring both and really not knowing and having a firm grip of the process can be very daunting for an owner. So sometimes they cling to the existing GM to help them through the head coach process. Ultimately, that doesn't work. Typically, it doesn't work out well, I should say. But if the owner is leaving the door open for a head coach to possibly bring in his own GM, that doesn't bode well for Trent Baalke. Because if I'm a head coaching candidate interviewing, unless they have a previous relationship with Trent Baalke, I probably want to bring in my own guy, somebody who I know, somebody who I know I can work with. So maybe Trent Baalke's on thin ice. Otherwise, I think they're going to get like the second-rate head coaching candidate who's willing to take any job that's offered to him.
It'll be very interesting to see where that goes. I mean, it wasn't too long where Trevor Lawrence was considered a kind of a blue chip prospect. And we all know how Hogan feels about the Jacksonville Jaguars. He was zipping his lips over there and Trevor Lawrence. But yeah, it'll be very interesting to see. There were a couple other moves. And, you know, the one team that sticks out to me is the Jets right now. Obviously, the divisional quote unquote rival for suckback team in the AFC East with the Patriots. Rex Ryan brought in, Mike Vrabel brought in, Ron Rivera brought in. Where is this going? Rex Ryan on record, you know, we've talking about how great he is when he's talking to the media and how funny he could be. And, you know, he seems pretty confident he's going to end up with that head coaching job. And, you know, as a Patriots fan, you know, it'd be a great storyline for the division, right? With Rex Ryan shooting his mouth off again at the podium, kissing the ring, blah, 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 that whole thing. I'd love to see it. Does he have a shot?
Well, he interviewed, so to say he doesn't have any shot would be foolish. So he's a very persuasive guy, very engaging. He's nothing if not confident, so it doesn't surprise me that he's publicly said that he's the best candidate for this particular job. I understand where he's coming from in terms of really rebranding the Jets, bringing a toughness and a culture, which is what he did the first time around when he was hired. Mike Tannenbaum from the 33rd team is consulting Woody Johnson throughout this process. And one of the things that Mike Tannenbaum always used to tell me, kind of a motto he lives by, is you got to measure twice and cut once. Well, it seems like he's measuring 20 or 25 times before cutting, because he is bringing in a litany of head coaching candidates and GM candidates for Woody Johnson to consider. Now, what I would say is, based on my experience being around the team for about two decades, is that Woody Johnson needs to have things distilled and reduced to simplest terms. The more options you give Woody, the more difficult it is for him to come to a decision. And this is just not my opinion. These are people who have been in his ear, consultants throughout the years, whether it was as the Jets owner or the UK ambassador the last several years. I think when you overcomplicate things for Woody, he gets frazzled in some respects, really not the, with no disrespect to him. Again, this is from information from people who work with him closely have told me. It's best to give Woody few options and clear options, as opposed to bombarding him with a lot of different options. It's like, in many respects, it's human nature, something called choice overload. You know, that's it's kind of why I'm going on a tangent here, but it's kind of why Barack Obama always wore a white shirt in office. You know, he said he had so many decisions he had to make on a daily basis. The last thing he wanted was to, fill his brain space with what color shirt he should wear. So he wore a white shirt every day in office. And in many respects, you got to do that with Woody. I think you have to come to the table with two or three really good candidates. But I do understand Mike Tannenbaum's position. He's a consultant. He's getting paid, and he wants to bring every viable candidate and turn over every rock. And that's really Tannenbaum's MO. I got a lot of respect for Mike, one of the most thorough people I've ever been around, incredible work ethic. So he's undoubtedly bringing in high quality candidates for the Jets. How much say he has in influencing who he brings in and who Woody Johnson hires, that's something that nobody other than those guys know. What I will say is that some of the names associated with the Jets GM and head coaching position are incredibly qualified candidates. And I think they would be really great hires. Whether Woody decides to pull the trigger on those guys or not remains to be seen. But they are doing as thorough of a search as I have ever seen, at least in the last 15 years during the hiring cycle.
Yeah, it's quite a polarizing thing when you look at the Patriots search and what the Jets are doing. They're got a small net, wide net. So it'll be interesting to see. We'll obviously touch on this as developments come out over the course of the next few weeks on here on Between the Tackles. But for now, let's take a break. We'll go hear from our sponsors. As always, we're brought to you by Fans First Sports Network. Get over, check them out. Every sport covered, articles, podcasts, you name it, it's all there, covering you up right through the NFL playoffs, just the same way we are. So we'll be right back after hearing from them. All right, and we're back. Thanks again to our sponsors, and as always, happy to be a part of the Fans First Sports Network. And we'll move right along into what's coming up this weekend, playoff football. It sucks our Patriots aren't there. We got so accustomed to it every year, meaning, playing either this weekend or next weekend, but this year they are not. We got a great slate of games coming to you this weekend. Chargers at Texans, Steelers at Ravens, Broncos at Bills, Packers at Philly, Commanders at Bucks, and closing out with the Minnesota Vikings at a neutral site against the Rams. Some great football coming up. I think now's the time we might want to recap our regular season picks. Champions side, what do you say there, Hogan? Huh?
Let's go to the playoffs.
Well, as you've been following us, we had our champions pick race for the year. We made it fun last week, Manish and I, by upping the stakes a little bit, picking against each other. And I'll just say this has been a great segment. It's been a fun one, being able to pick games and kind of keep track of it as the year goes on. I'm not just saying that because you're talking to the champion, baby. Champion. I remember when we started this segment, I was getting clowned on because I went 0-3 in the first week. Right, Hogan? Right?
I told you, I was the Patriots.
Bert, you were 0-3. I don't remember that. Week one?
I went 0-3.
Yeah, he was a basement dweller.
Basement dweller.
Quite the turnaround.
Call me the 2016 Patriots with the 28-3 comeback. So, final record.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
I'd say 0-3 Patriots getting smoked 31-0 by the Bills to turn it around and win the Super Bowl.
Fair.
Yeah. Let's relax with our analogies here, huh?
So
was that the lawyer Malloy year when they cut him?
Yeah.
And Drew Bledsoe was the quarterback for the Bills.
Yep. Right. Yep. I remember that game vividly. Champion, Burge. 28-19-1 on the year. Manish, you had a good run there. We were
right at 500 in there.
Better than 500.
I'm right more than I'm wrong. That's all. I'll take it. I'm right more than I'm wrong.
24-23-1 on the season. And then our clown show of a host, Hogan, 23-25, just under the 500 race. I look forward to doing this through the playoffs and doing it again next year with you guys. I think this segment's been a blast. So without further ado, we're going to go right into the playoff matchup. So we're going to do it a little bit differently here. Hogan, do you want to explain how we're going to do it?
We're just gonna pick teams in the playoffs and hope that I don't come in last place. How's that sound?
We're picking every game. Everybody is picking every game throughout the playoffs because there's only a few games each week. So, Basement Dweller, I'm gonna give you the honors of going first for our picks this week.
Oh, thanks. Well, I just want to remind everybody out there that I was the only one that had a clean record where it was wins and losses, not ties,
here we go.
Not ties like some other losers, but I won't go that way. I'll start us off on the playoffs here, and obviously I'll talk about the first game that's on the slate there, and that is going to be the LA Chargers visiting the Houston Texans there. LA Chargers are opening up as 3-point favorites in this game, if I'm not mistaken, there, gentlemen. And I like that. I like that a lot because the Chargers have come into their own this year. Manish, I think it was before the season started that you were, you know, singing the praises of Harbaugh and what he was going to do for that team. And obviously Ladd McConkey has worked out phenomenally for them, including that run game they got going with J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards out there, and that you know, perennial all-pro offensive line they got with Joe Alt and Slater. I mean, they look great out there. And Herbert really came into his own this year as well. Didn't have the eye-popping stats that everybody, you know, usually comes to expect from him. But, hey, when you finish with an 11-6 record and you're in the playoffs, nobody's going to be sitting there, you know, saying bad things about your stats because you got a winning team and you're playing good football. And unfortunately for the Texans, I think they kind of slid into the division winning there because that conference is obvious, or excuse me, that division is very, very weak down there in the AFC South. Obviously, we all know about the turmoil with the Colts, the Jaguars, and who am I missing?
Titans.
Oh, the Titans, that dog crap team down there. Yeah, that's right. I'm clowning on you clowns again. F the Titans. We're getting your coach. F the Titans. Anyway, yeah, Texans obviously took advantage of a very, very disastrous division down there. But at the same time, injuries have absolutely wreaked havoc on that Houston team. Obviously, everybody knows Stephon Diggs is out for the season with his knee there. Tank Dell was another unfortunate casualty of a game a couple weeks ago, if I'm not mistaken, on Christmas Day, possibly, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, Houston, I think, just has a lot of uphill battle to overcome. And I think the Chargers are peaking at the right time while Houston is just crashing down. So I'm going with the Chargers in this one, who are the favorites.
Love it. Love it. Manish, who you got in this one?
I echo everything that Hogan said. Now I'm taking the Chargers -3. The one team's trending up, the other team's trending down. If not for the AFC South, I don't think the Texans would have made the playoffs. Really disappointing season, even though they made the postseason. It's strange to say that, but C.J. Stroud took a significant step back, I think, in his second year. And if you're being honest, over the last 2 months of the season, you can make a legitimate case that Bryce Young, who was the number one pick 2 years ago over C.J. Stroud, had a better final 2 months of the season than Stroud did this year. Really disappointing. We'll see if Stroud can bounce back in the postseason. But this team, to me, is leaking oil. The Chargers, you know, Jim Harbaugh has done wonders. You know, as much as we talked about bringing in a culture setter in New England, you can see in L.A. what Harbaugh has done. This was a losing team in 1 year, flipped them around. The statistics, as you said, Hogan, might not be off the charts offensively. Certainly, Herbert has played much better from a number standpoint in the past, but just from a pure real-life football standpoint, I think he's playing his best football of his career. And 3 points on the road, I'll take that any day of the week. To me, this is going to be a game where the Chargers control start to finish. I don't really think it's going to be particularly close. I'm not saying it's going to be a 3-touchdown blowout, but I think this is a game that the Chargers can control and then march on to the divisional round.
I'm going to echo everything you guys said too on this game. I think this is one of the games that all three of us are in complete agreement on. The Texans, it pains me because I was so high on them last year coming into this year. You're right about Stroud and Bryce Young, you know, the injuries to the Texans offense with Tank Dell going down, Stephon Diggs being down, all these guys getting hurt. They're leaking oil, like you said. So I like the Chargers in this one. I'll start us off on the second game of the slate, Pittsburgh at Baltimore. And I think Baltimore, they have who my choice would be for the most valuable player award in Lamar Jackson. Pittsburgh is kind of, you know, down the stretch, hasn't been playing all that great. They, you know, Russell Wilson hasn't looked great at all for this team. I have a good friend who's a Steelers fan and is just livid at how they've kind of almost essentially kind of limped. I won't say they limped in the same sense that Houston did, kind of backdoored in because of their early season success. But I think Baltimore is a team that could very well also be peaking at a good time. And I, you know, the spread on this game is big. It's -10, or it's 10 points. You know, the Ravens are laying 10 points in this one. I like the Ravens to win, and I like them to, you know, maybe this is going to be Lamar's year. So, Manish, where are you going with this one?
I'm taking the Steelers and the points. I'm not taking them to win. I just think 10 is a big number in a playoff game. between division rivals. They split the season series. You know, Pittsburgh eked out the first meeting. The Ravens really had their way in this most recent meeting. But in terms of who's going to win and lose the game, much like the game we just talked about, one team's trending up. That's Baltimore. They haven't lost in a month. Another team I don't think has won in a month or close to it in Pittsburgh. So, you know, I don't agree with you that Lamar should be the MVP, simply because I think he didn't deserve the MVP. This is obviously not the way you should vote, and I don't have a vote, but I don't think Lamar should have won the MVP last year. He's already won two. Josh Allen hasn't won any. It's really a toss-up if you're being honest about who should be the MVP. So I'd give it to Josh Allen. But in terms of this game, I think Lamar will have his way. I'm hoping the Steelers can keep it in single digits because, again, division rival, playoff game, 10 points, such a huge number. I would anticipate the Ravens would move on, but I'm hoping the Steelers can keep it relatively close and competitive.
I hope not.
Hogan. I know. I heard your pick.
What happened to Saquon for MVP? You know, you're talking about Josh Allen? Oh, boy.
Yeah, Saquon for MVP died in about mid-December. It was great for the first 14, 15 weeks, but I think it's pretty obvious it's going to wind up being one of the quarterbacks. I don't think you can go wrong with either guy, but Allen hasn't won before. And like I said, Lamar had the most fugazi MVP last year because no quarterback had a great season. So he kind of won by default, maybe, or I don't know. I kind of think it should have been Christian McCaffrey last year. But I know that shouldn't factor in, and hopefully it doesn't factor in with the voters. But honestly, it's a coin toss. Both these guys had MVP-worthy seasons. I just think that, what Josh Allen did after losing his best receiver in the offseason is remarkable. Just an incredible player. Both of them are great. I think Josh Allen deserves it slightly more than Lamar this year.
Boo. Hogan.
Jeez. Well, I'm going to echo Manish there, and I'm going to actually take Pittsburgh with the points. I don't think they will outright win this game. I think they'll keep it close because, again, divisional battles are always mega interesting in the playoffs. I mean, it's very difficult to beat a team three times, but like you said, they split the series in the regular season with the home team winning each of their bouts there. But I do think the Steelers try and keep it close and the Ravens take advantage of it. And it'll be interesting to see if Lamar can figure out how to throw the football in the postseason this time. So,
all right, well, we'll move on from one game with the potential MVP, and in my opinion, the MVP, to another potential MVP, Manish's MVP, and that is Denver taking on Josh Allen's Buffalo Bills in Orchard Park on Sunday. Manish, who you got in this one?
I like the Bills. Again, it's a big number. I don't like the big number, but they're not division rivals, so it's not as if they've played each other twice already. Bo Nix, rookie quarterback, incredible rookie season. I look for him to make a couple mistakes. Wouldn't be surprised if he threw multiple picks. Buffalo's a really tough environment. Just too good. You know, I think it's been a great season for Sean Payton and the Broncos. Kudos to them. Sean Payton, frankly, hasn't got enough Coach of the Year talk. I don't think he's going to win it. He's certainly deserving. Bo Nix, certainly deserving of Rookie of the Year. He's not going to win it either. But I just think, you know, their season comes to an end in a very tough environment against a team that, to me, is poised to go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, Buffalo has been a juggernaut this year, much to my dismay. I'm going to go next year, and I'm going to pick the Broncos plus the points. And, you know, I said before the recording, all my picks were for outright wins. I'm going to walk that back a little bit. I am going to believe that the Broncos will win, but if I'm going with my heart, and that's how I often pick when I'm picking against the teams that I'm passionate either for or against, as I go with my heart. I think that this is going to be a closer game. I think the Broncos have played great defense. The Sean Payton factor is real. There is concern for me with a rookie quarterback playing up in a tough environment, but I do like this game to be closer than people think. And I just want to say that we were robbed of a Joe Burrow versus Josh Allen game again. And you want to know who was at fault for that? Jacoby frickin' Brissett and Gerard Mayo in week one winning that game against the Patriots. That's the game that the Bengals are going to look back at and be like, we should have won that game. And we were robbed of Joe Burrow playing Josh Allen again, because I would have been like Bengals in that game because of how Joe Burrow had played down the stretch there. But I digress. Hogan, who do you got?
Well, I was gonna say the Bengals were robbed, and then we were robbed because if we had lost that game, we'd have the number one pick.
Bingo.
Anyway, I'm gonna echo Manish again, and I'm gonna take the Buffalo Bills at this point. Buffalo's shocked me this year with their ability to bounce back from a good season last year to an even better season this year, where I thought they were going to take a step back based off of everything that happened and transpired during the offseason, losing Diggs and the players that they did. Yeah, Broncos, nice story and all that, but at the same time, I don't think they're at the same level as the Bills. So give me the Bills plus nine.
Yeah, you're picking against your champion here. Two picks in a row. Didn't learn all season, did you, Hogan?
Are you talking? I'm not listening. Sorry.
You actually just made me look and see if I was muted there. You made me actually say that there.
Good. Good.
Oh man, let's move on to a great NFC matchup. Green Bay at Philadelphia. I'm going with the Packers in this one. They're laying the five. They're getting 5 points. We've talked about Philly on here quite a bit. Manish is a known Philadelphia Eagles fan, and I don't have faith that Philly will do it. Jalen Hurts has been dinged up over the course of the season, so it'll be interesting to see what he looks like if he plays. I like Jordan Love in the Green Bay Packers. If he's able to go too, he got dinged up in the game last week as well. I love Matt LaFleur as a coach and what he's done up there in Green Bay. And I frankly don't have a lot of respect for what Nick Sirianni has done in Philadelphia. I think he's a product of the talent on the roster. And I think this is a classic letdown spot for Philadelphia. And if it goes the way that I think it's going to go, I think Nick Sirianni could be looking for a job after this game. Manish, I want to go to you, the Philadelphia Eagles fan. Where do you sit?
Well, pains me to say it, but I think the Packers are going to win outright. I'm certainly taking the points. Jordan Love practiced in full on Thursday, so it doesn't look like his elbow is going to preclude him from playing. Jalen Hurts also looks like he's going to be able to come back from that concussion he suffered a few weeks ago. He'll be ready to play. What's interesting is that when Jalen Hurts plays, it'll be his first meaningful snaps in essentially a month, because he got hurt early when he suffered his concussion a few weeks back. Didn't play the following couple weeks. So he's been out basically for a month. Maybe it takes him a little time to ramp up. Maybe it's a little bit of rust factor. These guys played incredibly well in the season opener in Brazil. It seems like another lifetime ago. But the Packers and the Eagles were in a shootout. Both teams had over 400 yards of offense. A really fun game to watch. I would anticipate that it'd be close again. I'm just a believer in the Packers. Not to say I'm not a believer in the Eagles. I certainly am. The Eagles, I think, got the worst end of things. They could have either played the Packers or the Commanders, depending on how things shook out last week. I would have much rather played the Commanders, especially since the Eagles blew a lead against the Commanders a few weeks back. I think they would have been ripe for a comeback and just demolished Washington, but that didn't happen. Packers are a cold weather team, so come to Philly this time of year, it's not going to impact them at all. I think it's going to be a fun game. A lot of Saquon, a lot of plays from Jordan Love. The bugaboo with Jordan Love, of course, is mistakes, turnovers, interceptions. Eagles defense, best in the league, at least statistically. So they could make life a little bit difficult for Jordan Love. But I just have a gut feeling, and again, it pains me to say it because I hope in my heart of hearts that the Eagles move on. But this is a spot where I think Green Bay, just like they did a year ago when they went into Dallas and really destroyed them. I don't think they're going to destroy the Eagles, but I think it's going to be a competitive game, a close game, and I think they get their revenge from their week one loss against the Eagles.
All right, you both took the Packers, right? So obviously I got to be the trifecta and say, screw you both, I'm going with the Eagles. Eagles are going to win this one. Give me the Eagles. That's all I'm going to say. You guys talked about it enough. Let's go into the next game here. I'm going to talk about it really quickly. Washington Commanders taking on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Give me Washington, the underdogs, to win this. 3-point underdogs as far as what I'm looking at on the screen here. Yeah, nice story. Baker Mayfield did a bunch of amazing things for the Buccaneers. They're banged up, blah, blah, blah. I don't care. Give me Washington. Give me the rookie of the year. Jaden Daniels, mic drop. I'm out.
Love it. Because guess what? I'm going the same way. I'm going Washington Commanders. We've been on this podcast saying I'm a fan of what they've done down there and turning that team around. I love what Jaden Daniels does. Definitely there. He is my choice for rookie of the year. Unfortunately, it's not my guy, Drake May, but I love what they're doing. I think that, you know, the Bucks have played well throughout the season. I think they've kind of exceeded expectations down there in Tampa Bay. I think this is a time where we might start seeing something from a rookie in the playoffs here, making a big move and getting his first playoff win out under his belt. Manish?
All right, I'm going to disagree with you guys. This is also, by the way, another rematch from week one where the Buccaneers destroyed Washington. But as Todd Bowles said this week, you know, they're a different Washington team. Obviously, Jaden Daniels is much more seasoned, much better than he was in his first pro game. I would anticipate it to be much more competitive than it was in week one. I just haven't been a believer in Washington. I know there's been some magic around Jaden Daniels this season, but you know, I'm a believer in Todd Bowles. I'm a believer in the season that Baker Mayfield has had. Mike Evans, you know, unstoppable. He's probably going to play until age 60 and still be good somehow. Bucky Irving, their rookie running back, tremendous season. I think it'll be close. I like laying the 3 points, taking the Bucks, laying the three. I think, again, another great season for a rookie quarterback. I just think Washington's road ends this weekend.
You know, I think that, you know, I Washington might be this year's Texans for me with where I really want to see them do well, and they might just not be ready yet, but I like them to get this win. So let's move on to the final game. This one's got an interesting twist to it. It's Minnesota at Los Angeles, and given the events that are unfolding out in LA, this game has been moved to Arizona in Glendale at a neutral site for Monday night's game. I have the Vikings winning this game. They obviously laid an egg quite a bit when they played against Detroit last week for the bid for the one seed. They kind of got the doors blown off, I know, to Manish's dismay there and one of his picks for the last week of the season. But it doesn't change my opinion of them as a team. I think that they are going to make some noise in this playoffs. Yeah, the Rams have, you know, had a really good story this year. They've really played well throughout this season. Sean McVay is an excellent coach. Matthew Stafford still has it in the tank. And, you know, we witnessed it up here in New England when they came up and absolutely blew the doors off the Patriots. It wasn't even a game. So I think this is going to be a very entertaining game. I do have the Vikings laying the 2 points to win this game. I think what Kevin O'Connell and Sam Darnold have done up there has been incredible. We've talked about it before. Kevin O'Connell's my pick for coach of the year. Love the Patriots tie there. And so give me the Vikings laying the points. Manish, who you got?
I totally agree. I think it's a bounce back game for Sam Darnold. He could not have scripted a worse game than he had in Detroit, especially in the red zone. They had so many opportunities and he could not connect. Probably his worst game of the season. I don't know statistically if it was, but certainly in moments where it mattered the most, he really could have played better. He'd be the first to tell you that. I think he bounces back. I also think it's a revenge game for the Vikings, who lost earlier in the season to the Rams. And what I thought was fascinating was earlier in the week, Brian Flores said that they did not anticipate Puka Nacua playing in that first game. He had been banged up for a while. He did play that game. He lit up the Vikings. I think he had 7 or 8 catches over 100 yards. They're obviously going to be better prepared for Puka this game. Stafford was on a heater that game, 4 touchdowns. I don't think any turnovers. I think it's a revenge game. I think it helps out to a slight extent that it's in a, you know, quote unquote neutral site, even though it's still out west in Arizona. Overall, great season for the Rams. They're trending up. I don't count this week 18 loss to Seattle. They didn't play anybody. They had won 5 in a row prior to that. A lot of close games, close shaves. I just think that there's a reason why the Vikings won 14 games. It wasn't by luck. They're not going to lose to the same team other than Detroit twice in the same season. So I think they get their revenge against the Rams, and I think they march on.
Hogan?
You guys are wrong again. The Rams, baby. Come on. McVay's been there. He's won a Super Bowl. Yeah, the Vikings are a nice story, blah, blah, blah. It's Sam Darnold. Come on, us Pats fans, we know what Sam Darnold brings. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding, obviously.
Don't go there.
He's got Justin Jefferson, and Addison's actually come on amazingly well this year. And I got to give credit where credit's due. Brian Flores has got that defense playing lights out, and I can't name a single defender that plays for Minnesota right now. That's how good Brian Flores is doing that job there. I mean, I'm being honest with you. I remember the days, Heath Evans and the Williams brothers. I love that Minnesota.
The Williams brothers. Oh, God.
A while ago. Old.
Yeah.
See? I'm an old man. That's what I like to go. I mean, everybody remembers like Jared Allen and all that stuff. Yeah, the Williams, those tanks that they had there. But no, I do like the Rams. I think that they have the pedigree where they have the experience. They've been there. No disrespect to Kevin O'Connell or Sam Darnold, but obviously the Minnesota Vikings had a storybook season. I think it was 2 years ago with Kirk Cousins where they were unbelievable. They blew the doors off of a lot of people and they made it to the playoffs only to get their pants absolutely trounced by the New York Giants when Daboll was first there with Daniel Jones of all people. So until the Vikings can actually prove it, I'm going to go with the experience and I'm going to pick with my heart. And that tells me that the Rams and McVay are going to get it done.
I remember that Vikings team. I remember that outrageous Justin Jefferson catch up in Buffalo on like fourth and a mile, and he makes the catch. I'm watching this game out of my seat, so pumped that the Bills were going to lose that game. Maybe we get a little bit more Justin Jefferson magic in this one. We'll see. I hope so. I hope you're wrong, Hogan, as I always hope that you are.
It's fine. You can hope. I know.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see, Mr. Basement Dweller. We'll see.
I mean, I am in my basement, so you're factually not wrong.
Hey, I guess I am too. I am too. So I guess we're both basement dwellers.
I really, I really respect Hogan's confidence. You know, last place doesn't matter. He still brings the heat. I appreciate that.
I'm like Rex Ryan, baby. I got to have that confidence. The job's mine. I'm going to get it.
It's not even close. Like, you're going to win this playoff football pool, and it won't even be close.
And hey, what's the worst that I can do? Stay in last place? I got to be confident, cocky, and douchey. That's what I got to rock with.
There's going to be missing person posters up all over town with my face on it if that actually happens. It's going to be a hard time for me to come in here and sit here, but I'm going to have to do it because, Hogan, you sat here and you took it. So
that's right.
Kudos to you for once. But there you have it. There's our playoff edition of the Champions Race. We're back all 0-0, just the way all the NFL teams are. So be sure to follow along. We'll have our picks out, and we'll make sure that you can roast us or praise us. We'll see how it goes. But you guys have anything else you want to add on before we plug this sucker up?
I can't wait till next week when we talk about who Vrabel's going to fill out with his staff.
Me too. Maybe something actually talk positive stuff about the Patriots as opposed to just bitching about them every week for 18 weeks, right? Actually, I was the one in week one saying, hey, this team has a chance to go 3-0. This team has a chance to go 3-0.
I remember that.
Do I look like an absolute moron for saying that? Say it. Go ahead. Say it. Go ahead.
No, I'm all set. You said it yourself. I'm all set.
Hey. Accountability is my specialty, so what can I say?
Right. Dan Campbell, Coach of the Year, by the way.
Ooh, so we got Manish and I in the Kevin O'Connell camp, and you're in the Dan Campbell camp, huh?
22 guys on IR, and you get the number one seed?
Valid argument. It's a valid argument.
Come on, and if he wins it all, no contest.
I am hoping he wins it all. But we'll have to wait. We'll have to wait and see where that goes.
Wait, hold on. Do they do that before the Super Bowl, or is that right?
Yeah, they vote before and they announce it a couple days before the Super Bowl.
That's lame. I think it should all encompassing. Get it in there.
Yeah, I've always thought the MVP should be after the season, after the playoffs are done.
Because then you're gonna have Saquon win it, and then you're gonna no. Regular season MVP is fine.
I still think Josh Allen would win it, but
not if he gets trounced the way I think it's gonna happen in Wild Card Weekend.
Well, we'll have something good to talk about if the favorites hold, because it'll be Lamar at Buffalo in the divisional round in all likelihood. So Allen versus Lamar.
I change my pick. I want that to. I'm just kidding. I want. I actually would love to see that. That would be great viewing because Lamar's had quote unquote ghosts up there in Orchard Park. So we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes here. Wild Card Weekend. Can't wait to cozy up and watch some playoff football again. And hope you guys enjoy the Wild Card Week. And we'll catch you all next week. Peace.
Later.